Namaste and welcome to the Bharat Vartha podcast. I'm Roshan Karyappa. The media landscape has changed tremendously over the last 10 years with the rise of independent media that offers an alternative to the mainstream narrative. Mindmakers, started in 2015, is an eminent example of just that. It's one of the most popular sources of news and views for the Indian diaspora. And today it's a pleasure to be hosting two of the founders, Harita Pusarla and Pramod Kumar Buravalli, on the podcast. Welcome to the Bharat Vartha podcast, Haritaji and Pramodji. Thank you so much for making the time.
Thank you, Roshan. I appreciate it very much. Wonderful to be here.
So, you know, Mindmakers started in 2015, right? And I'd love to hark back to that time. If you can give us a picture of how things were at that time and, you know, what led to the founding of Mindmakers itself. Pramodji, you could start and, you know, Haritaji can add to that.
Well, I came to the US. I had a background, previous background to in ABVP, and I was, very involved in the quizzing ecosystem, in participating in debates way back in 90s. Especially my college that I went to, BVP College of Engineering in Hubli, Karnataka, was a hotbed for debating, you know, as part of all that, those societies, general knowledge, related quiz competitions. And after I came here in 2001, I went to University of Texas in San Antonio, but the writing itch never stopped. I used to write letters to the editor, whoever would accept a rebuttal, anything about India and Hinduism per se, where I started getting the feeling that the narrative is essentially purposefully, pitched against us. And I was a student. I had no understanding of the larger sort of ecosystem and trying to slowly learn and understand how it works. And then started writing for Rediff.com, IndiaDefense.com, Indo-American News, essentially on geopolitical affairs related to technology that India was looking to procure or had already procured from the United States, and commenting on what could be the missing pieces. And if it was in the genuine interest that India and United States should have a mutually respectful relationship. But then the larger sort of discourse was set against India from the get-go. It didn't matter who was in power in New Delhi. They had a specific a narrative that was spun for many decades that was percolating into the university system. And I was beginning to feel, disgusted because there was no response from the community. And we were just taking the beating left, right, and center. So in 2009, I started a publication. I was aligned with the Sangh and the Overseas Friends of BJP at that time. In 2009, I put together a mini publication called Pravasi Kamal, which is essentially a group of friends and well-wishers of the Kamal, a proverbial Kamal, and ran that almost for 5 years, 2009 to 14, during which time I met a lot of writers, very highly qualified researchers who had specific subject matter expertise in areas that they wanted to be heard, they wanted to be seen, they wanted to know whom to talk to, but the Indian establishment was essentially stonewalling them. So in 2015, after the elections of 2014, I decided to get all those writers, and most of them were very independent-minded. They had no Sangha or BJP or ABVP background like I did. And in fact, I also felt that there is a very big segment of intellectuals that get pushed off by this tag of being associated with the Sangh, and for whatever reason there might be a lack of a platform or whatever. I thought maybe I should also look at the independent landscape and cover all voices. Let's see if there is anything that can benefit India and we can act as a bulwark to protect whatever we can in a little way. And that's how in 2015, I started Mindmakers with Sunanda Vasist, Adit Kapadia, and then eventually Harita also joined us as in the capacity of a co-founder, her specialization being foreign affairs, because we obviously being located outside of India, we wanted to have a different lens. So that's how the journey started. And in the past 7 years, it has grown by leaps and bounds, the kind of opportunities we have seen to promote India's interests in a very healthy, respectful manner. We feel very proud that we are able to do our little bit from all the way over here.
Wonderful. Haritaji, we often talk about this mainstream narrative, right? I mean, you can call it an anti-India bias or an anti-Hindu or a Dharmic bias. And we've done a couple of episodes specifically dealing with this with Ruchir Sharma and Vishal Ganeshan, right? That goes into the depth of, you know, how this, where this stems from and, you know, how it pans out, right? For someone like you who writes about foreign affairs, right? I mean, how do you see this happening? And how has mind makers been able to like sort of combat this narrative over the years?
Yeah, first of all, like, thanks a lot for having me. And then, like, just wanted to say that, like, right from the beginning, I used to consider that, like, national security affairs or foreign affairs, which are, like, integral to the territorial integrity and sovereignty of the country, should be above all these political bickerings. And it's unfortunate that we kind of find this kind of a narrative which is existing in India, which is mostly anti-India. It's always about finding faults with what's wrong with India and what is wrong with the leadership and things like that. It has never been about a constructive debate. In the sense, like, even if we are in a position of a strength, and even if we are like genuinely doing the right things in the right way, it has always been the thing that, like, something is wrong, something is lacking. And more so after 2014, for whatever reasons, obviously known to everybody, it has become even more, like, belligerent, which shouldn't have been the case. And then, like, just coming, giving you the latest example of the border standoff at LAC. So there has been like even like there are reports like even Chinese people were also like astonished by the way the Indian media has been repeatedly pinpointing or pinpricking things, which is not really needed. So it all adds to the fact that there is something, some kind of a counter narrative which is going against the dispensation. And then dispensation and things like that shouldn't matter or figure, at least in terms of like security aspects, which I feel is like really sacrosanct. So this is what has really puzzled me, like how to address this kind of a situation, which is really very inimical to Indian interests.
And the bitterness exhibited, the bipartisanship that was there until 2019, has descended into an absolute mockery of the Indian democratic institutions outside of India. So when you go, I mean, it's hunky-dory and fine to have a healthy debate here and there in India while you're in India. But when you go outside, you always obviously have a very united front. And that is why I really like the friendship, deep friendship that P.V. Narasimha Rao and Vajpayee had, no matter what their political differences were. There was a unified strategy. There was a consensus on certain issues, both on defense and foreign policy, which was existing even until 2019 at the back channels level, which I don't know what happened. Passing away of Arun Jaitley, maybe. I don't know if there is anybody to manage that relationship, the opposition. I just saw Rajnath Singh go and meet AK Antony and Sharad Pawar just to discuss China, which is a good beginning. But these things cannot be messed up. It shows a sign of weakness, and this dithering is antithesis to what our forefathers have stood for, which is essentially when it is the outsider, you always keep him outside. You know, go fight, you know, Bhishma said to Yudhishthira and to Arjuna and Bhima that go rescue your brothers. They are your brothers. The Gandharvas are still outsiders, and go get them back. And I don't know what sagacious leadership the BJP can exhibit right now to basically quickly recover the ground which took 60 years to build, especially when it comes to dealing with three competing superpowers that are at this point in time at your throat. And when I go deeper, we'll talk about that later, but the United States, Russia, and China all want to pin India down, right? You still have to deal with them. You have to do business with them. You have to make them believe that you are on their side all the time, except that you also have to, build your own ecosystem and do your Atmanirbhar stuff, right? So it's important that that kind of messaging is portrayed. And we hope and pray that at least the diaspora hopes and prays that this kind of bickering and name calling and unnecessary debate on certain strategic issues should not spill out of India.
Right. And also it's in stark contrast of what's happening outside, right? I mean, if you look at how Russia or China or, well, Russia and China are dictatorships, so you can't really compare apples to apples. But even if you look at US, irrespective of who owns the, I mean, who comes to power in the US, right? I mean, the narrative seems to be pretty much the same. The state policy as such is pretty much uniform and consistent, right? I mean, whether there's a Biden or there's a Trump, there may be like certain tactical differences, but overall, broadly, the narrative and the policy and even the discourse to a great extent is the same.
It's the civilizational strategy that they follow to the teeth, and it is implemented by their establishment, you know, which whoever comes to power essentially can play a little bit of politics here and there and have a foreign policy victory, like Trump going and trying to make do with whatever he could with Kim Jong-un, right? Mm-hmm. And Singapore and Vietnam, right? There was some leeway there, but still the you know, State Department officials basically told Trump, you can go only that far and no more than that. Harita will have probably more details to that. I just wanted to summarize that it's the establishment, the deep state, as it's called here. I'm pretty sure there's a counterpart to that in Russia and China. It doesn't matter who the vyakti is. That vyakti puja that is being done right now in India essentially is the undoing of a setup that was done many, many years ago.
Just want to add here, the basic drawback with India has been India failed to create or failed to have a kind of a narrative. In the sense, as Vikram Sood has pointed out in his book, The Ultimate Goal, especially in the context of US has right from the beginning had a broader vision as how it want to project itself in the world. Okay, that kind of an institutional building or the kind of a study narrative setting which should be there for a country to offset has been missing in India right from the beginning. So even after independence, we had to falter a lot or had to learn and relearn and reinvent the wheel to just get to know how to deal with our neighbors and also how to project ourselves as a country. So that kind of an institutional setting has been really absent in India, which even now I feel is which should be irrespective of which kind of an ideology which you want to propound or you want to advocate, we should have had a kind of an institutional building, good think tanks, a kind of an strategic ecosystem, which should really lay ground as how we should deal with each of the powers in global context. That kind of a narrative or that kind of an initiative or the foundation and the pillar has been missing in India. So that has been the basic lacuna. And then even when we are dealing with China or Pakistan or some other country, it is that we fairly do not have a kind of a set framework or set kind of an understanding laid out by the people who are do this hardcore diplomacy to help us guide that this should be our interest and this should be the way we should proceed. So even now we are slowly learning it, as Vijay Gokhale has recently pointed out, it is slowly that over years that we are learning to deal with these new power, with these powers, especially China, in context of China. So what he has told was they had a kind of a ideology where they never used to even bother they very well knew by themselves that their diplomacy is based on deception, but then they never blinked an eye to relook at it But they used to always do that and always had a kind of a contrasting narrative which is running parallel. For example, they would outrightly do this kind of a deception and then would say a win-win cooperation under BRA and things like that. So these are the things like we should have had learned, or like we should have had even like had our think tanks channelized for us. Like this should have been the way that we should deal with particular country. So this is just one example.
And might I add to what Harita has eloquently said, and I want to just summarize that. I don't want to kind of stretch into this lack of narrative business too long. It's in the making. Hopefully it will strengthen over time. But Roshan, have you always figured why our foreign policy is essentially one man, one slogan business? It's always either Nehruvian consensus or Modi saying Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. These are one-liners. How does it translate to what our foreign officers would be doing? Does it translate only to these yogic poses or Ayurvedic tablets? Or is it at the ground level, will we man up and say, we will not brook and any sort of interference as far as our interests comes in either South Africa or Myanmar? Can we do something on the ground? Can we set up a peacekeeping force? We have for God's sake, 1/10 of our Indian army is deployed for United Nations missions, right? The most underappreciated peacekeeping force is the Indian army that is deployed for these missions, where no recognition comes forget United Nations Security Council seat, right? The permanent seat is never going to come. All of this good boy attitude, ki hum acche log hain. Oh, hum kitne acche log hain. You kitna bhi humko maroge, hum to ek aank, ek naak, ek paav dikhayenge, but we're good people. We'll only follow due process of law. Agar Mehul Choksi wahan pe bhaag ke, has come back into Antigua again, who is asking you not to send you a couple of blokes and, whisk him off? You can take him away. Nobody's going to stop you, right? Show what you're capable of. You are capable of that, but unfortunately, I don't know what it is that stops the establishment from projecting power and saying, at least humne try to kiya, right? Krinvanto Vishwam Aryam was what our ancestor told us what our goal is, right? We have to project that civilizational capability by saying we are much better in peacekeeping efforts than you are. Which somehow there is a cutoff from our civilizational ethos to what is basically being deployed on the ground, unfortunately.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. I mean, we may have strategic interests, but we operate very tactically. At least that's what it seems like, right? I guess we haven't really done the hard work and the arduous journey of really reconciling our civilizational reality with the nation state that we have today, right? Which is why, I mean, you see different voices and different stances when the government changes, as you mentioned, either a Nehruvian consensus or the new sort of a narrative with Modiji, right? So, my friends Harsh Gupta and Rajiv Mantri have written a fantastic book on this, right? A New Idea of India. Now, this crafting of the narrative itself, right? I mean, we've gone from blogs to social media to books these days, right? And that's been a really amazing evolution over the last 10, 15 years, which I've seen, right? So as you said, Pramodji, I mean, we started off reading some of this alternate narratives and so on Rediff, right? I remember reading that on Rediff and Sulekha and, those blogs and stuff. And then we moved to Twitter and so on. And today, I mean, we have all of these other independent channels, right? Which are taken very seriously as media outlets itself. So in the last 10 years, how have you seen this evolution, considering that you are part of the ecosystem and you have a ringside view of it, right? So how have you seen that evolution over the last, let's say, 10 years?
It is very encouraging. The kind of upsurge in demand, upsurge in inquisitiveness, the upsurge in wanting to know more, getting the information at fingertips, and the ability of the Indian, common Indian, to discern what is fake news and what is not is at an all-time high. there is that kind of trushna, as I call it. It's that eagerness essentially to grasp at the reality that they just don't believe everything that is being said to them. And obviously, this is due credit to the BJP for repeating this narrative of the left taking over all the establishment systems, academic institutions, and all that repeatedly over a period of 60 years has had its effect. But then you still need us to build up to that expectation, because it's a huge, huge sort of ecosystem that the left built. And it took them 75 years to do so, much before the Indian independence, political independence came in 1947. So for the so-called center or center-right dispensation to either replace or provide competitive content, it takes time. You have to churn content. You can't cut, copy, paste. You have to find original thinkers. We have done so many writers' workshops. Almost 1,500 writers have written for Mindmakers for 7 years. There's Swarajya. There's many of them. Many publications that have sprung up to basically address the niche areas that essentially that they can cater to. For us, we have always said we are outside, right? In India, whenever we go, there's this perception of the NRI who doesn't know ki yahan pe kya ho raha hai. Aapko nahi pata, aap utna dur baithe ho, you don't know. But my sister Harita is right there, you know, and we have traveled to India almost very frequently the past 20 years, almost to the point that I don't know where my real home is. So there is still that kind of zone that has to be identified of what you can specialize in. And we chose geostrategic affairs. Obviously, foreign policy has a big role to play in it, and see if we could create a little bit of a positive narrative rather than just react all the time. And maybe have a team ready with content. You know, if somebody at the higher level has the wherewithal and the fortitude to basically pick that content up and use it as a weapon, we have the ammunition ready. We just need the people to start using it at a mass level. Harita can probably add more with her experience of editing thousands and thousands of articles, but it's a very happy ecosystem right now. There's a lot of information sharing. There's a lot of collaboration. At the same time, there is obviously no support from the establishment, again, without any, I don't want to mince words, but this has developed independently without any support from the establishment. And I'm astonished at the way every other month I'm seeing something new that addresses something that we had thought was essentially lacking, 10 years ago. You know, there's that startup ecosystem where the Indian middle class was aspiring to basically go earn money is actually addressing the civilizational questions, right? And that is where the inflection point will happen and the churn will happen. It's a 1,200 year glani. And for us to essentially hope that it will happen overnight is, it's a very tough shot.
Sure. Harita ji, you want to add to that?
Yeah, it's like really welcoming that there is kind of a new awareness about our civilizational roots and things like that. And then in this context, I just want to reflect on like what has changed in our foreign policy as such. Like for what Modi has been like initially like criticized is his lack of foreign policy acumen. When he has taken over initially. But then from 2014, it has been a kind of a steady rise in the sense he tried to wade into these waters, steadily pushing himself on two prongs. That's one is having a right kind of a communication with the Indian diaspora. And then another one is soft power diplomacy. That's through yoga and things like that. Even if we want to undermine these kind of things. But these are the very essential things which have really brought some kind of a focus onto what India is. At UN, when we have first introduced, we wanted to have an International Yoga Day. It's really surprising, in the first shot itself, 177 countries have agreed that, okay, let's have this kind of a yoga day. So this is one kind of a thing. And another thing is having a steady kind of a connect with Indian diaspora abroad. Indian diaspora abroad is least used used force by India especially. Unlike China, which like vigorously pursues these the diaspora abroad, India has never consciously made an attempt to use that. So this kind of a new phenomena or a trend, which like Modi has like consciously introduced, has really earned some kind of a dividends, which though are not like right now imminent, but then like there has been kind of a new energy, new surge of enthusiasm. Like there is a kind of a new belief that India can do something. So that kind of infusing aspirational energy into India has been one of the positive dictums of Modi foreign policy, which I feel is like underappreciated. And then that had like really a lot of a power to turn the tide around. So
because the reason why it's underappreciated, and this is where I have a slight bit of kind of a difference of opinion with Harita, is because there are excellent projects. There's no question International Yoga Day, even after just the COVID, second wave ended, the Indian consulate here in Houston and across the United States did carry forward with the Indian Yoga, International Yoga Day. There's a lot of public coming around it. Vaccine Maitri was a spectacular achievement. Whoever came up with that should be given all the kudos. They just overturned all the 2 years of bile thrown at Indian diplomats on account of CAA, Kashmir and Ram Mandir and all that kind of junk that was thrown at India was overturned just by 3 months of vaccine Maitri, as it's called, hashtag vaccine Maitri. Who came up with that? Was it a one-off thing? Can it be institutionalized? Can it be structured in a way that it becomes permanent, or is it just a figment of somebody's imagination? Quickly hit the ground running, just do this as a project. It looks like the latest hot thing that China is doing. Follow the hashtag and just go and do whatever they are doing. So is there, I guess my larger question to even Harita is, and to you guys is there a method to the madness? Can somebody write about it? I know Harita wrote a book actually on Modi's foreign policy, and I hope the dots can be connected much more that can essentially evolve into a plan of action that can be implemented. It doesn't matter which dispensation comes to power.
There are few things in this aspect. Like one is like India's climate action, which is widely appreciated. India has been one of the main foremost countries or the developing countries which has like acceded to COP21 INC contributions. And that has been like massively appreciated. Another thing is the International Solar Alliance. That has been like, we should say like some people, like some analysts over-enthusiastically call it as OPEC of India. But we have to wait and see how it's going to gain a geopolitical influence. But to say the least, like it is in the past 7 decades, it's only one UN-affiliated institution whose headquarters is in India is something which is a moment of a pride for all of us. And another thing is like India has been steadily establishing itself as like the first responder in the region, especially in the Indian Ocean region. The kind of a humanitarian assistance and disaster and the help that's been extended during the disasters and the floods and things like that, especially in this Indian Ocean region, has been really spectacular. And then this is like India is like slowly but steadily building up that it's going to be a responsible power. So these are the kind of a soft power elements which India is like steadily deploying. And then we have to wait and see how it is going to build it on this. So this is where I come back to my original point when I have said that like India lacked any kind of a framework, in the sense like they should have identified certain regions, like these are the regions where we are going to pitch in, and then these are going to be forte with which we should be identified, or the kind of a things. So even if like for suppose like some other dispensation is going to take off in India after 2024, they should enhance these kind of things which are already in place. Similarly, India has like advocated Sagar, which is like first a sustainable growth and development for all the Indian Ocean region, islands and stuff like that, and then blue economy, and had kind of a some kind of a maritime aspirations as such, which are not belligerent as compared to China. So here in that, like, we have that kind of an advantage, and then we command that kind of a respect, unlike when China says that it's a peaceful rise, people hardly believe it. When India says that, like, it is how we are going to assist, and then we are like for collective development, this is how, like, these are the things which India can slowly build. Because, like, when it comes to the comprehensive CNA or the comprehensive national power, India is far behind the in all other established powers. And these are the small things which India can collectively do and project itself as like a rising power.
That is true, because that template already exists. For some reason, maybe it's because of the nature of our customs or traditions, and wherever we go, we take a piece of India with us, and we've always been the most peaceful diaspora in comparison to anybody. So somehow it just comes natural. India doesn't have to do a thing. It just has to embody what we already are displaying on the ground, which is our natural selves. We don't have to throw in and bring in an aircraft carrier to rescue people and stuff like that. That's not our cup of tea.
Yeah. So marrying some of this ethos into foreign policy will obviously take time, right? I mean, it's decades and decades of baggage that we're talking about. And, last mile on some of these things are so complex. I mean, in corporate circles, we talk about change management, right? I mean, and how big of a force inertia itself is. Now, overturning all of this in 7 or 10 years, I mean, is not going to happen. And it's probably going to take decades more for us to, like, you know, have that unified front, right? So one of the things I noticed was that recently Mind Makers joined the SMART initiative launched by Dr. Vinay Sahar Sarbudde, right? The Samachar Manyata Association for Research and Training, which is a coalition of nationalistic media outlets, as it's touted to be. So could you talk a little bit more about this coalition, Pramodji?
I can give a little bit of cursory overview, but I think Harita knows much more considering she's in India. But there is a need for us to amplify. There's a need for us to collaborate. There's a need for us to fact check. There's no sort of inherent well of wisdom or knowledge that we could go to and tap into that. There's nothing like that exists. So this is one such effort that I really felt it's no strings attached, yet at the same time, we're all talking to each other, kind of understanding what it is that we can do to amplify each other's messages and help each other out. Because that's what, if there's anything you can learn from the left, it is the cooperation they exhibit directly and indirectly. It doesn't matter. You promote, right? That is what Hindus have to learn. From anybody for that matter, unless we collaborate and cooperate and help nurture each other's whatever activities we are into, there is no way anybody else is coming to our rescue. So I really like that kind of larger architecture, but Harita probably has more brass tacks knowledge on what's happening there.
Sure.
It's like one of the much needed ecosystem which has come in right time at the right place, I should say. In the sense, like, they are like trying to bring out all the like-minded people under one umbrella and making a humongous effort to bring some kind of a coordination between all of these organizations, which are really striving for only one thing. That's like reinfusing some kind of a new energy into India and deriving our own strengths from our cultural roots. So this has been the larger message. And then this is like, should be the one, this should be the real kind of a right approach, that if we want to really take head on the kind of an ecosystem which has strong roots already. So this is the only alternative that I suggest should have been in place.
I don't want to call it an editor's guild yet, because it's in the works right now, and it's evolving, and it's we have to have our own architecture in this, and JK Javerji and all the big people involved in this are essentially putting their hard-earned respect and reputation at stake by stating that there is a Samachar Manyata that can be essentially projected, which means in this process of saying fake news to everything, is there really a good news? Is there really news that can not be called fake? What does that mean, right? What kind of validation process are we going through? Now, many companies or many organizations, many are nonprofits, they have their own set of systems, their own editorial guidelines. But can there be a common approach to the validation? Because in the rush to get the news out, are some folks, even within this trust or outside the trust, are they jumping the hoops? And can those people be made to understand that we should not fall prey to the same thing that the left fell to, you know, many, many, many moons ago, which is essentially hit the ground running and get the news first and get the news out there into the dispensation. And also get the newsmakers to you know, create a brouhaha before the actual event really, you know, take shape. So there's those things that we cannot learn. We have to understand that as so-called, let's call all of our organizations you know, nationalistic media organizations, our goal is essentially to make sure that if one of the organizations basically needs help in validating some stuff, which is very basic, can that happen? Do we have other sources that can help them out if they're pursuing a story, if they're really doing seminal work on the ground? Can we help them out? Can we collaborate? Do we have material already that can act as a primer to what they're doing, all, you know, on the ground? So there's a lot of good, exciting things. I'm not at liberty. I want to be smart and stay silent.
Right. I mean, it could be a great vehicle for collaboration, no doubt, right? And I feel, I mean, collaboration is something that's extremely underrated, right? I would say that there are specialties that each of us can bring to the table that can be a 1+1=5 or 10 kind of a thing, right? The amplification of it could be way more than just a very tactical U+me kind of a initiative.
As long as they are all on the same plane, that we are all instruments, at the same time, we are all individuals, and it's a distributed architecture. We cannot all be the same, thinking the same thing all the time. We are not assembly line robots that can parrot the same thing. And that is why I want that critical mass to build of right. thinkers who can be very critical, but is that positive criticism? Is that leading to something that can come out of this initiative, right?
Right.
That's what energizes me.
Pramodji, I think that's a feature, not a bug with this side of the ecosystem, right? So I think, I mean, if you ask 10 people, there'll be 14 opinions, right? There is no, there's no coalescing around a certain sort of a view, except for the Bharat First sort
we're
of...
Never yeah, we are never linear. We should never be linear. If we are linear, what's the difference between us and them?
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
So,
I'd love
more
to...
Power to us.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'd love to talk about the book that you have coming out, right? I mean, we briefly, you know, chatted about it, you know, before we started recording. Could you tell us a little more about the initiative? What was the experience like putting it together? And, you know, where can people purchase the book?
Well, I am the mama. She is the mother. and she basically struggled for almost 4 or 5 years now in kind of putting this together, compiling it. And essentially the vision started like this. And again, growing up in the 90s, Malayala Manorama yearbook, I really looked up to it. The facts and figures, you know, fact files on each country's data that could be available on my fingertips, which now Wikipedia provides, which again is suspect, right? So what kind of manyata can we build? Can we build a small little one-stop shop for facts, figures, statistics, records, and any sort of data that our people preparing for competitive exams can look up to over a period of time? This is a work in progress. It can't be all true. It can't all be accurate. We did our best in compiling for 4 years. 2020 was the first version. We came out with the ebook because the first COVID wave set in April, so we couldn't do the print. But in 2021, we came up with the print version. I got my copies here also in the United States. They're available on the website. We didn't. We chose deliberately not to sell it anywhere else for obvious reasons. If we are wanting to do Atmanirbhar, you know, we better sell what we are producing. So mind.net, the website itself has a link where you could go to purchase both the 2020 and 21 yearbook, both print and ebook version. I'll just add one thing that next year being the 75th year of India's independence, we have a lot more exciting features. We'll have much more time to add and accommodate a lot of these Indic influencers. I was president of Indic Book Club in 2017 and 2018. I helped launch Indic Academies initiative in the United States. And there's so many of these budding writers, thinkers, activists that hopefully if I'm able to at least insert a small little segment on some of them. And again, these are budding bureaucrats that are preparing for the exams, and which is, we all have this consensus that the next generation of leaders should basically know what Indic knowledge is. And if it is in the form of a yearbook, they can utilize for their, you know, whatever gaining of knowledge, etc. We would have done our job. Mm-hmm. But it's a work in progress still, Roshan.
Right. So, Haritaji, what is the impact you hope to achieve from this?
Yeah, it's like, people, especially youngsters, are like, are quite enthusiastic and then curious. They want to know what has happened and then what is India and things like that. So they have so many sources, but then having the right kind of an information is one thing which is like really a very difficult thing. So what we have tried to do is like pull up all the things together and put them together. So in the sense, like our mind book carries an overall, it has a comprehensive outlook of what has happened in India for that specific period of time. Since it's an yearbook, I'm talking in the context of yearbook. So we have put together all the things like the politics, current affairs, and the military and strategic affairs, foreign affairs, and then like history and culture. History and culture is one aspect which is like dominant feature in our or the highlight of our book, where we have brought about certain things like, for example, like very few of us do know that like Chola Empire has been in like been extended till Philippines, and then till 15th century, Chola rulers had their like regime in place in Philippines. And then we had the Hindu rulers, women rulers in Philippines. And then especially there is something like what we have like a kind of a Johar in India, a similar kind of a thing had happened in Philippines, that which Indian Indian women ruler or the Chola ruler has done it. So these kind of things, which are less known facts, we have tried to bring in together, and about things like Liberation Day, which is widely celebrated in Telangana, how like the real kind of a masterminding has happened between like Indian government and the Nizams, things like that, which are less talked about. That is what has been our emphasis in this book. And then another thing has been like, while we see country profiles everywhere in most of the books, we have tried to bring in, we had a small column within that where we had like Indic temples, meaning like we had mentioned the topmost Hindu temples, Buddhist monasteries, Jain temples, and also Sikh Gurudwaras, which are present in that country. And also bringing the kind of a foreign policy perspective or the military perspective, we have added a kind of a column on military, like their hardcore military power in terms of like active personnel military, and then the number of tankers or like their strengths, especially in terms of air, water, and land strengths. That's like all the three wings. And things like that. So these are like, we have tried to collate all these things together, and also have given a brief outline of what are the important aspects which have happened in the entire year. which have made a great impact on the country in every aspect.
It's essentially an almanac of the year. It's like the top highlights of the year preceding the publishing of the yearbook, top articles that went viral both on Mind and a couple of our friendly publications, including eSanskriti, Indic Today. There are a couple of other publications that are basically we just began talking to in certain areas, strategic areas, that I would want to republish some of their web-based viral articles onto our next yearbook. So I'll be more than happy to send you and others at Bharat Varta a copy as well. And again, the endeavor started in my mind in the 90s when most of the information can also be essentially presented in a positive manner, right? You know, you basically, like I said, the top three temples to visit, you know, nobody knows if there is ever a ranking, right? If you are quickly going to a country Botswana in Africa, what do you do? And so you basically could talk to somebody locally, or there could be an established ranking. And we went, obviously, as far as the restaurants are concerned, we went on to Michelin Star, we went on to Jagat Survey, we went and compiled a lot of information based on the recent most ranking of Indic restaurants. Again, these are Indic restaurants, not Indian restaurants. There's a context to it. God willing, with a lot of energies, we have, like I said, thousands of writers who have contributed over the years. Spectacular ideas have come in. We want this to also serve as a potential sort of a, there's a center spread. We published this year, kind of a summary, an abstract of Nilesh Oak's work on chronology, where he stated Ramayana based on archaeoastronomy, Mahabharata, and so on and so forth. This year, next 2022, we want to publicize the work of Vijay Kumar and his great service that he's doing by retrieving some of the murti stolen, that are there outside still. But then he has done a body of work for the past 10 years that we want to kind of showcase and kind of present a poster. It's kind of like a center spread. It's right in bang in the middle, actually, where you can see Nilesh Oak's work here. Similarly, you will see Vijay Kumar's work also coming in hopefully next year. So this, again, like I said, everything, there's a method to the madness. Obviously, I can't compile everything here. You see that is the chronology, right? And there's a lot of inquisitiveness from mainstream Americans also on some of these books, some of the works that are happening. Hopefully, we'll be able to have some of them, be showcased in libraries across the United States next year. So it's a work in progress right now.
Wonderful, wonderful, and seems like an amazing initiative, a much needed initiative actually, right?
Thank you.
How has the Indian diaspora supported you in all of these endeavors that you, undertake?
Very, very supportive. They understand what is the reality outside. With the advent of nationalistic media, both in India and outside, there are many such initiatives in the United States and UK as well. There is a clear understanding that there is something wrong. What we, from India assume is that it's all hunky-dory and kids do not get influenced so easily by the New York Times and Washington Post and other publications, right? It's not the case. The next generation, which is essentially born and raised here, bases its opinion on India and its civilization off of the opinion that a big publication, projects for a period of time. So it's an uphill battle. At the same time, the generation that is fighting out is people like me who have come here, who have seen best of both worlds, 20 years here, 20 years there, who are still holding out, and we understand that you have to get into in the way they think, the technology they use. You have to go and be where they are at, rather than asking them to come and listen to what you have to say. Some good positive things that have happened is the advent of Trump, the mockery he has made of American democracy makes Indian democracy looks like a heaven. So Trump has been a great change maker in Indo-American perception game. You know, so the Indian American kids who looked up to the so-called the establishment is now completely confused and dithering, basically because they thought that this is the shining hill, this is the beacon of hope for millions and billions of people. But look at Trump undermining their own system, right? When that happens, that is the opportunity of a lifetime when you start talking that, okay, well, can you come out of that matrix, that dreamland you've been living in, and look at other positives from other parts, including India. And that change is happening. There's tremendous sort of response in the Indian diaspora when it comes to the positive. Again, like I said, vaccine Maitri was such a harbinger of good news that came from India. I can't tell you, those 3 months undid what Pakistan and other countries were doing repeatedly from 2017 onwards against all the Indian missions, and whatever the you know, narrative battle they had waged became undone just in 3 months. Right. So it's, like I said, a very supportive community that we have here.
Yeah,
both here and in Europe as well.
Both those trends have sort of coincided, right, in some sense. I mean, the scaffolding has come out with some of the Western structures and expose the kind of underbelly that is there anyway, right? And the pristine sort of a structure that was shown we can see it for what it is right now. It does have its own problems and troubles that are there for everyone to see, right? At the same time, I mean, there's also like a growing positivity about India, right? I mean, so one of the rising segments of our audience is, you know, people who are abroad who say that, hey, you know what, there was nothing positive about India, but seems like, I mean, you guys are talking about plenty of these things, and, you know, that is what I love to listen to on your podcast, right? So I think it's a healthy coincidence that, you know, these two have come together and amplified a sort of a national narrative, I would say.
Because the critical mass has arrived. It's now 1% of the population here, and it's in several segments. It's a voting, there's a game changing voting segment also in certain segments, both in Texas, in the New York, New Jersey area, or the California area. They're now achieving that critical mass that is required to make our voices heard. And our diaspora is not mincing words. You know, the victory that Rashmi Sawant has achieved in her relentless battle at what she faced in Oxford. It's at that individual level. Like I said, there's no institutional support. There's no BJP. There's no Modi. No nothing. There's no sort of, there's no umbilical cord as is projected everywhere. These are individuals. Archana Sunil Iyer, she got up and made such a spectacular speech in Seattle when the local city government of Seattle decided to brave and rear its neck out and decide to pass a resolution against India on CAA. A crime-ridden city like Seattle dares to poke its nose in India's internal affairs, and India went, hoo-ha, oh my God, everybody's saying CAA is bad and everything. There's this common middle-class lady, Archana Sunil, who lives in Seattle. I think her husband works in one of those IT companies, and bang, she made such a spectacular statement, and that's it, pin drop silence. Sunanda Vasist, one of our co-founders, and now she has donned the role of activism. The way she intervened in the congressional hearing, that was, again, one man. I don't know what Ahvana happened, and Ma Kali went into her, and she just ripped apart those five people who were just looking to, you know, basically pounce on her, right? So, I don't know where it is. I'm a traditionalist, and I believe our time has arrived. Whether you like it or not, with or without Modi, there is a pent-up demand. The demand is that we need to be heard. We're not saying we want to be number one, number two, or number three. We don't care about those things. Our culture is never like that, right? Mm-hmm. But hey, you know, we have been persecuted. We are the most persecuted civilization in the world, yet we are standing here. We are saying we'll hold no grudges. We are not going to pull you out of your houses and basically ask for reparations. We're not doing that. We're saying that, okay, we realize some rot set into our own internal systems, which is why we lost our battles with you, but we are still standing here. We're not giving up. Our voice is being heard. And that is, I think it's all credit to the individuals who are making up their mind that they've had enough and they're coming out on the street on whatever platforms they have access to, and speaking their mind.
Right. So this has been a fascinating conversation. We've spoken about many elements of, independent media and foreign policy and national narratives and so on. To round things off, Haritaji, what do you have coming up at MindMakers? And MindMakers always prides itself on being independent, right? And a sort of a loose coalition of writers in that sense, right? So is that going to be, is that going to be the way ahead as well? And yeah, could you talk about some of the initiatives coming up?
First of all, we want to strengthen this kind of ecosystem with more amount of our knowledge, which is lying unexplored and unexploited. So in the sense, we want to bring out the facets of Indian civilization, especially we have in place a project where we want to bring out 100 Hindu rulers, made a kind of a difference that nobody else could have ever made. So we are trying to bring out, we are just currently working on that project. And another thing is as you know, we have this mind book and we want to make it really a reference book for people. So that whenever they are in doubt or whenever they say that these are the things happen, they can cross-check and refer to what has really happened. A kind of an encyclopedia thing which we want to build up steadily. Then and it's always going to be in yearbook pattern only. And another thing is we are trying to have a book on economics by Professor Mukul Asher. And my book, which I have published on Modi's foreign policy, we are trying to bring that thing as well. So these are the thing work in progress. And then, as you have rightly pointed out, we always want to be an independent media, giving platform and voice to independent thinkers who think that their idea or their thoughts about India are going to make a sea of difference and change. So it's also an attempt to groom youngsters or to kind of cultivate a kind of a positive interest towards their country and then herald in them a kind of a hope that, okay, my country or my nation has had a spectacular and a glorious civilization. And then it's upon us to build it and take it forward. So it's kind of a kind of what you say is springing in some kind of a new aspirations in our youth, saying that it's not only that we have to look to West to say that it is what is development. We have our kind of a developmental model, which together we can infusing or with the civilizational roots or the civilizational values which our ancestors have tried to imbibe in or put in, we can awaken these people and try to build up a new India, a India of hope.
Fantastic. Pramodji, you were saying?
I just wanted to add and, look back over the years of people like me struggling to find a publication where all I wanted to say is that there is this perception of Hinduism, of snake charmers, of people who are, who don't have strategic thinking and who essentially are dependent on the West for validation, right? And I want to see a Bharat in the next 20, 25 years where we are essentially at least able to establish some original thinking, re-establish original thinking, which we lost in the way. And we have to admit it, there's a lot of reasons why we have, but the long story short is that when you are having a civilization that has a wounded civilization, as Nayapol used to call us, we are trying to find our way back in this Kala Chakra, and we are looking to see if we can either go from Kali Yuga to either Satya Yuga, which is the most ideal, most civilization. But are we at this point in time saying, okay, there is still a lot of knowledge level that has to come out to the public, more understanding on what the architecture is of our Indian civilization. And you know, how are we going to express ourselves? Are we just going to continue to be reacting to what the left has said, the narrative that the left has said, or can we make a new narrative? Can we create something new and say that, okay, let us be trendsetters instead of following what is latest and greatest out there? So hopefully mind makers, for whatever our effort has been, is a small drop in that ocean to do whatever we can to project Ma Bharati in her resplendent form. And we'll continue to do so until whatever energies we have left in us.
Well, that's a great note to end the podcast on. Thank you so much, Pramodji and Haritaji, for joining us and enlightening us on all of your endeavors. All the best for them. We hope that every one of them succeed. And, you know, to everyone who's listening, do check out mind.net. They're a fantastic repository of perspectives from an Indic standpoint. And I'm sure that you guys will appreciate it. Again, thank you so much for joining us, Pramodji and Haritaji. This was a fascinating conversation and look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you so much, Roshan.
Thank you.
Very nice meeting. Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Bharat Vartha podcast. If you want to see more content like this, then don't forget to subscribe to our channel. We started Bharat Vartha to facilitate long-form discussions on politics, policy, and culture. We don't necessarily endorse anything that was said in this episode. If you wish to offer us feedback, do reach out to us on social media. We are at Bharat Vartha on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You could also get in touch with us on our website, www.bharatvartha.in. The links are in the description below. Until next time, stay safe, take care, and Jai Hind.